Chapter 14. Wednesday, May 18th. Figueroa got up at 5 on Wednesday morning and went for an unusually short run before she showered and dressed in black jeans, a white top and a lightweight grey linen jacket. She made coffee, poured it into a thermos, and then made sandwiches. She also strapped on a shoulder holster and took her Sig Sauer from the gun cabinet. Just after 6, she drove her white Saab 9-5 to Wittangegarten in Vellingby. Mortensen's apartment was on the top floor of a 3-story building in the suburbs. The day before, she had assembled everything that could be found out about him in the public archives. He was unmarried, but that did not mean he wasn't living with someone. He had no black marks in police records, and no great fortune, and he did not seem to lead a fast life. He very seldom called in sick. The one conspicuous thing about him was that he had licenses for no fewer than 16 weapons. 3 of them were hunting rifles, the others were handguns of various types. As long as he had a license, of course, there was no crime, but Figueroa harboured a deep scepticism about anyone who collected weapons on such a scale. The Volvo with a registration beginning KAB was in the parking lot about 30 yards from where Figueroa herself parked. She poured black coffee into a paper cup and ate a lettuce and cheese baguette. Then she peeled an orange and sucked each segment to extinction. At morning rounds, Salander was out of sorts and had a bad headache. She asked for a Tylenol, which she was immediately given. After an hour, the headache had grown worse. She rang for the nurse and asked for another Tylenol. That didn't help either. By lunchtime, she had such a headache that the nurse called Dr. Endrin, who examined her patient briskly and prescribed a powerful painkiller. Salander held the tablets under her tongue and spat them out as soon as she was alone. At 2 in the afternoon, she threw up. This recurred at around 3. At 4, Jonasson came up to the ward just as Dr. Endrin was about to go home. They conferred briefly. "She feels sick and she has a strong headache. I gave her Dexafen. I don't understand what's going on with her. She's been doing so well lately, it might be some sort of flu."
"Does she have a fever?" asked Jonasson.
"No, she had 98.6 an hour ago."
"I'm going to keep an eye on her overnight."
"I'll be going on vacation for 3 weeks," Endrin said. "Either you or Svantesson will have to take over her case, but Svantesson hasn't had much to do with her."
"I'll arrange to be her primary care doctor while you're on vacation."
"Good. If there's a crisis and you need help, do call."
They paid a short visit to Salander's sick bed. She was lying with a sheet pulled up to the tip of her nose, and she looked miserable. Jonasson put his hand on her forehead and felt that it was damp.
"I think we'll have to do a quick examination."
He thanked Dr. Endrin, and she left. At 5, Jonasson discovered that Salander had developed a temperature of 100, which was noted on her chart. He visited her 3 times that evening and noted that her temperature had remained at 100. Too high, certainly, but not so high as to present a real problem. At 8, he ordered a cranial X-ray. When the X-rays came through, he studied them intently. He could not see anything remarkable, but he did observe that there was a barely visible darker area immediately adjacent to the bullet hole. He wrote a carefully worded and non-committal comment on her chart. "Radiological examination gives a basis for definitive conclusions, but the condition of the patient has deteriorated steadily during the day. It cannot be ruled out that there is a minor bleed that is not visible on the images. The patient should be confined to bed rest and kept under strict observation until further notice." Berger had received 23 emails by the time she arrived at SMP at 6:30 on Wednesday morning. One of them had the address editorial-sr@swedishradio.com. The text was short, a single word. "Whore." She raised her index finger to delete the message. At the last moment she changed her mind. She went back to her inbox and opened the message that had arrived 2 days before. The sender was centraled@smpost.se. So, 2 emails with the word "whore" and a phony sender from the world of mass media. She created a new folder called Media Fool and saved both messages. Well, then she got busy on the morning memo. Mortensen left home at 7:40 that morning. He got into his Volvo and drove towards the city, but turned off to go across Stora Essingen and Grundal into Södermalm. He drove down Hornsgatan and across to Bellmansgatan via Brännkyrkagatan. He turned left onto Tavastgatan at the Bishop's Arms pub and parked at the corner. Just as Figueroa reached the Bishop's Arms, a van pulled out and left a parking space on Bellmansgatan at the corner with Tavastgatan. From her ideal location at the top of the hill, she had an unobstructed view. She could just see the back window of Mortensen's Volvo. Straight ahead of her, on the steep slope down towards Prisgrend, was Bellmansgatan 1. She was looking at the building from the side, so she could not see the front door itself, but as soon as anyone came out onto the street, she would see them. She had no doubt that this particular address was the reason for Mortensen's being there. It was Blomqvist's building. Figueroa could see that the area surrounding Bellmansgatan 1 would be a nightmare to keep under surveillance. The only spot from which the door to the building could be observed directly was from the promenade and footbridge on Upper Bellmansgatan near the Maria lift and the Lorinska building. There was nowhere there to park a car, and the person doing the surveillance would stand exposed on the footbridge like a swallow perched on an old telephone wire in the country. The intersection of Bellmansgatan and Tavastgatan, where Figueroa had parked, was basically the only place where she could sit in her car and have a view of the whole. She had been incredibly lucky, yet it was not a particularly good place because any alert observer would see her in her car. But she did not want to leave the car and start walking around the area. She was too easily noticeable. In her role as undercover officer, her looks worked against her. Blomqvist emerged at 9:10. Figueroa noted the time. She saw him look up at the footbridge on Upper Bellmansgatan. He started up the hill, straight towards her. She opened her handbag and unfolded a map of Stockholm, which she placed on the passenger seat. Then she opened a notebook and took a pen from her jacket pocket. She pulled out her mobile and pretended to be talking, keeping her head bent so that the hand holding her phone hid part of her face. She saw Blomqvist glance down Tavastgatan. He knew he was being watched and he must have seen Mortensen's Volvo, but he kept walking without showing any interest in the car. Acts calm and cool. Somebody should have opened the car door and scared the shit out of him. The next moment he passed Figueroa's car. She was obviously trying to find an address on the map while she talked on the phone, but she could sense Blomqvist looking at her as she passed. Suspicious of everything around him, she saw him in the side-view mirror on the passenger side as he went on down towards Hornsgatan. She had seen him on TV a couple of times, but this was the first time she had seen him in person. He was wearing blue jeans, a T-shirt, and a grey jacket. He carried a shoulder bag, and he walked with a long, loose stride. A nice-looking man. Mortensen appeared at the corner by the Bishop's Arms and watched Blomqvist go. He had a large sports bag over his shoulder and was just finishing a call on his mobile. Figueroa expected him to follow his quarry, but to her surprise he crossed the street right in front of her car and turned down the hill towards Blomqvist's building. A second later, a man in blue overalls passed her car and caught up with Mortensen. "Hello? Where did you come from?" They stopped outside the door to Blomqvist's building. Mortensen punched in the code and they disappeared into the stairwell. They're checking the apartment. Amateur night. What the hell does he think he's doing? Then Figueroa raised her eyes to the rearview mirror and gave a start when she saw Blomqvist again. He was standing about 10 yards behind her, close enough that he could keep an eye on Mortensen and his buddy by looking over the crest of the steep hill down towards Bellmansgatan 1. She watched his face. He was not looking at her, but he had seen Mortensen go in through the front door of his building. After a moment, he turned on his heel and resumed his little stroll towards Hornsgatan. Figueroa sat motionless for 30 seconds. He knows he's being watched. He's keeping track of what goes on around him. But why doesn't he react? A normal person would react, and pretty strongly at that. He must have something up his sleeve.